Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, our guest is Kelly Westland, Democratic Party candidate for Congress in northern Wisconsin's sprawling 7th Congressional District. Westland is a member of the Ashland City Council and a small business owner who is hoping to unseat two-term incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. She is running a campaign based on economic populism, raising the minimum wage, extending unemployment insurance, opposing cuts to Social Security and Medicare, repealing tax breaks for corporations, and expanding the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, so it includes a public option. The Republican Party of Wisconsin accuses her of being a blank check, in their words, for President Barack Obama, accusing her of raising taxes while on the Ashland City Council, opposing good-paying jobs at the Pinocchio Hills Mine, and, in their words, being out of touch with Wisconsin's middle class. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Kelly Westland is here in our studio, our guest for the next hour, and you can make up your own mind about whether she deserves to be the next member of Congress in the 7th District. You can make up your mind about her policies, whether they'd help or hurt people in north central Wisconsin, and whether her criticisms of Sean Duffy are warranted. In fact, we encourage you to ask her about all of those things yourself. You can call in right now with your questions and comments for Kelly Westland at 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open at 1-800-780-9742. And you can also post a question on the Route 51 Facebook page. Kelly Westland, thanks so much for being with us today and braving the snowstorm.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we understand you've got an event scheduled in Wausau at noon today. Tell us about that.
Well, we delivered a number of petitions to Congressman Duffy's office in Superior last week. The petitions were calling on him to tell us where he stands in terms of raising the minimum wage to at least $10.10 per hour for working families. And so far, the only response that we've gotten is that he would consider any bill before Congress, which to me is a congressperson's job. That doesn't tell me where he stands in terms of supporting an increase in the minimum wage. So we've come back with more petitions, and today we'll deliver them to his office and ask again.
How many signatures?
We have well over 10,000 at last count. I've got somebody tabulating the rest from the past week to right now. And then we have 10,000 from within Wisconsin and over 60,000 from across the country.
How and where did you collect them?
Well, it was through our mailing list. It was through some other organizations that have been helping to push the issue of raising the minimum wage.
A lot of people listening this morning probably don't know who you are and why you're running for Congress. So tell us about yourself. Where did you grow up?
Sure. I grew up in a military family. My dad was Air Force, my stepdad's Navy, and my mom worked for the Department of Defense.
And where was that?
We lived in a few different places, mostly Charleston, South Carolina. Also spent some time in San Antonio, Texas, and in Utah as well.
What brought you to Ashland, Wisconsin?
I went to school at Northland College, where I got my degree in conflict resolution, which I hope will come in handy in Congress.
They could use it. And when was that? When did you move up here?
I've lived here for, I'm going on about 13 years now, and yeah, so Ashland's really become my home. In fact, most of my family has relocated to Ashland as well.
Now, your biography says you're a small business owner. Tell us about that.
Sure. After I left the nonprofit organization that I was working for, I found that there was still quite a bit of demand for the work that I was doing. So I went freelance, and I started my own consulting business, where I've spent the last 3 years largely focused on various projects that relate to community and economic development, things like building a strong local food system, renewable energy, walkable communities, those sorts of things.
How long have you served on the Ashland City Council?
It's been about 2.5 years.
What prompted you to run?
Well, you know, I guess I'm the kind of person where if I look at the folks that are representing me in my government, and I think that I can make better decisions and be a better representative for my neighbors, then I feel a responsibility to challenge them. And I had so many great ideas for the city of Ashland, and I wanted to, you know, sit at that table and be a part of that decision-making process.
Were there any specific issues that stuck in your craw and made you want to throw your hat in the ring?
In terms of city council?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, anybody who's familiar with the Ashland City Council from a few years ago would know that it was a very, very contentious body that wasn't accomplishing a lot in terms of, you know, getting good things done for the community. And I just wanted to be a part of it first to change the conversation. We had to talk about issues of civility in terms of even just having, you know, discussions with each other. And I think that in the last few years, that's changed quite a bit. We've managed to do some good things and to move the city forward.
Well, if you get to Congress, and that is a big if, it's a very uncivil place. Do you think you'll be able to change the environment?
You know, I think that the only way that you change those things is to engage and be a part of the conversation. If you're not sitting at the table, then you don't get to be a part of that conversation. So we've got to change the people who are there.
Why do you want to serve in Congress?
Because, you know, I've got bigger fish to fry. I think that, you know, I'm somebody who believes in a democracy for and by the people, and that's not what we have right now. We have a democracy that is being co-opted by huge, powerful interests with lots and lots of money. Right now, when you look at our political system, there are so many people who care but are disengaged because they feel like their vote doesn't count because the money speaks louder than they do. And we're going to have to, we have to change it. We have to change it. And the only way to do that is to make sure that we're taking that power back.
Are you surprised that your race, as a person from, you know, little Ashland, Wisconsin, has garnered some national attention? Is it the Levo League? Am I pronouncing that right? They
mm-hmm.
they said you're one of 10 women to watch in national politics.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
Well, what is the Levo League, first of all?
It's a professional development organization for women, for women that want to, you know, build their careers and that sort of thing. And it was a bipartisan list. So when I saw it, I was really gratified to be a part of that.
Well, this would be a big step for you. Why do you think you've got the experience and the background to represent this huge congressional district mm-hmm. in Washington?
I have a track record as a coalition builder. You know, whether it's working with state and local governments or with the tribes in the region or with just individuals who are working hard. You know, I've worked for minimum wage. I've relied on unemployment insurance. I've built a small business. I've had to put together groups of people to stand up for things like, you know, our local control over water quality when it comes to this proposed mine in the Pinocchio Hills. It's something that, you know, when I see a problem, there's got to be a solution. We're creative people, and we just have to get the right pieces in the right place and make the right connections. And you have to be proactive and energized, and you have to be optimistic that there's a better way.
How well do you know the entire district? It's huge. I mean, it stretches from Wausau north to Lake Superior, and then across to Superior, and then the western border of Wisconsin.
It's about 26 counties. 26 counties that are part in the district. And the Shawmigan Bay region I'm very, very familiar with, as well as the whole northern tier. But I've done a good bit of organizing throughout the northern part of the state. I'm getting to know the rest of the district better and better all the time. Actually, over the next 6 weeks, we've got 30 events scheduled. So we'll be in every single county at least once over the next 6 weeks so that we can meet with more people.
What are your top priorities?
Right now, we're looking at the minimum wage. Really, all of my priorities are issues of, you know, there is a growing gap between the very, very rich and everybody else. And that's not just in terms of your income. It's also in terms of your political power. And we've got to change that because, really, we are ending up with a smaller and smaller group of wealthy and powerful people who are making decisions that have impacts on all of the rest of us. But all of the rest of us, if we engage and become a part of the discussion, we can change that to benefit us. And so the economic populism issues, you know, these are pocketbook issues. These are questions about how families stay out of poverty and build a secure future.
Congressman Duffy is a former prosecutor from Ashland County. He won his last two elections handily. The district has been redrawn, so without Stevens Point in Wisconsin Rapids, it's more Republican than it used to be, mm-hmm. and he's going to have a lot of money. How do you think you can defeat him?
Well, a couple of things. I'll say first with the redistricting, you know, Congressman Duffy was elected in the 2010 Tea Party wave. And when it came time for him to seek reelection, he was not willing to ask the same group of people to vote for him, which is why they drew out part of Chippewa Valley and Stevens Point. And even with the gerrymandering, this district is only rated an R+2. It's still very close to 50-50. And we have an awful lot of swing voters and people that are willing to look at candidates and to vote, you know, two parties on one ticket. And I think that works in our favor. Also, Congressman Duffy was very much out in front of the government shutdown, which was wildly unpopular in this district. And just this week, he voted again against paying our bills. So, you know, he's somebody that when polls were done in this past fall, they found that he would lose to a Democratic challenger by 3 points and that 59% of likely voters across the board expressed some disapproval with his role in the shutdown. He's vulnerable. And, you know, it is a big district, and we're going to depend heavily on grassroots organizing, and that's why we're meeting so many people.
We're going to get into all of that in just a few minutes, but a question about you personally. Are you personally ready for the rough and tumble of politics? Negative ads, the mailings, they're going to go through your past life and dig up everything they can about you and then put the worst possible spin on it. Are you ready for that?
You know, I have a pretty thick skin, but the hardest part has been preparing my family to see those ads, because I know that they're going to look at it and know that it's not true. In fact, both my parents are lifelong Republicans, and already the attacks that they've seen, you know, that's not true. How can they say that about you? And, you know, it's just a reality of our political system. It's unfortunate, but it's the case. And all I can say is that, you know, I believe in showing leadership by example. And I will be who I am and say what I think and be honest with people. And that's all I can do.
Your parents are lifelong Republicans?
They are.
Are you the black sheep in the family?
No, but they often wonder how it happened.
Tell us about your family.
Sure. Well, as I said, grew up in a military family, so we moved around a bit. My mom and my stepdad both are living in Ashland, actually, and so have my brother and my sister and her two kids have all relocated to Ashland area. So my brother works fast food, and he is, let's see, what year is this? He's 28 years old, and he's one of these folks that I'm fighting for in terms of having an increased wage so that he can make a living. My sister is somebody who relies on public assistance because she's a single mother with two kids. My husband and I take a lot of responsibility for those two children, Ian and Kennedy, 7 and 11. And
you have two kids?
No, my niece and nephew.
Okay. No children yourself?
No. But we care often for my niece and nephew. In fact, they were with my husband last night. We've missed out a lot of that family time since I've been on the campaign trail. But it's been great, actually, especially with my niece. I was involved with her and her Girl Scout troop. And she came home one day with an assignment to research a woman who was a leader. And we started talking, of course, for me, it was women in politics. And I'm rattling off this list of names, and I get to Hillary Clinton, and she says, well, who's that? And I said, well, she's probably going to run for president in 2016. And my little niece says, well, girls can't be president. And I just stopped it. I was like, whoa, I have some work to do. So I've been kind of really engaging her in this campaign to see that, yes, women can, in fact, hold these positions in our government, and they should.
Well, we've got a lot of issues to talk about, but before we do that, I was at your campaign kickoff news conference and rally in Wausau. Here's a report that I filed.
I've decided to run for Congress in the 7th Congressional District.
Speaking before a packed room at the Wausau Labor Temple, Kelly Westland took a hard line against Republican incumbent Sean Duffy. The Ashland City Councilwoman said if elected, one of her first priorities would be raising the minimum wage to $10 an hour.
Sean Duffy refuses to support raising the minimum wage to a living wage for working people. And then he complains that he struggles to get by on his salary of $174,000 a year.
Westland said she would make an issue out of Duffy's role in the events leading to the U.S. government shutdown.
In this district, there are a lot of federal workers, and when those federal workers weren't getting their paychecks, that's money that wasn't being reinvested in our local communities. Sean Duffy says he supports workers, and he says one thing in this district, but then he goes back to Washington, and he votes against our best interests.
In a press release, Westland's candidacy was slammed by the Republican Party of Wisconsin, which said she, quote, would be nothing more than a blank check for Barack Obama. Westland told reporters that she would stand up to the president on the issue of Social Security cuts.
Kind of absurd to me that Sean Duffy would talk about me being a blank check for President Obama when he is a blank check for big money interests like oil companies.
Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate praised Kelly Westland's candidacy, but didn't rule out the possibility of a primary. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And as of now, there are no primary challengers who've come forward. Kelly Westland, if you just joined us, is our guest on Route 51 for the remainder of the hour. And we are taking phone calls, questions, comments, what have you, for Kelly Westland live right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Do you like Congressman Duffy? Do you want to keep him in office? Do you have problems with some of his issues? Do you have questions for Kelly Westland? Again, the lines are open at 1-800-780-9742, or you can leave a comment or a question on our Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. As we just heard, Kelly, you're going to make an issue out of, or try anyway, of Mr. Duffy's positions leading up to the government shutdown. Why do you think that'll have traction?
Well, as I said, right after the government shutdown this past fall, the polling that was done showed that people were extremely dissatisfied with that. We expect our elected officials to do their job and to make good decisions, and not paying our bills is really not a good decision. To risk the full faith and credit of this country is just irresponsible.
Now, Congress, as you mentioned 2 days ago, raised the debt ceiling in a vote that attracted all but two Democrats and 28 Republican crossovers. Sean Duffy was not one of the 28 Republicans who voted to raise the debt ceiling, even though since the government shutdown, he's been outspoken, saying that the government shutdown was a mistake, and he insisted that it would not happen again. What does his vote against raising the debt ceiling this week say to you?
It tells me that he's trying to walk on both sides of the line. It's what I've been saying, that he says one thing in the district, that it was a mistake, but that he goes to Washington and he votes the other way to keep the government shut down again.
Well, we reached out to the congressman's office and asked for a statement from him on why he voted against raising the debt ceiling. And I'm going to read the statement. Representative Duffy could not support another extension of our nation's borrowing limit without a meaningful effort to get our spending under control or create much-needed jobs for our slow-moving economy. He has said all along that he would consider raising the debt ceiling if that bill was accompanied by meaningful spending reforms or tied to key pieces of legislation, such as the popular Keystone XL pipeline, and he has voted for increases in the past that have included those measures. Congressman Duffy voted against blank check increases in the debt ceiling because it did not include any spending reforms, let alone meaningful ones.
Mm-hmm.
Your reaction?
I guess that I would say if we want meaningful reforms in the spending in our federal government, then there are a number of things that we can look at. One is, you know, campaign finance reform, because that way we don't get as many of these special favors for our big campaign funders. Things like the giveaway in the Affordable Care Act to pharmaceutical companies. You know, if we could negotiate prescription drug prices, that saves $160 billion over 10 years. When the VA can negotiate, Walmart can negotiate, why can't Medicare?
Well, Duffy points to the massive size of the federal deficit and the debt and how it threatens our economic prosperity. He says it threatens the future of our children and grandchildren. Don't you think that that huge government debt and the deficit is serious? And aren't you worried about our children and grandchildren if they have to pay for it?
Sure. It's absolutely serious. I agree. But I don't think that we can cut our way to prosperity. We have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, this is a difficult time in the economy and that people still need things that are going to help them stay out of poverty. If we keep cutting programs that people rely on to keep them out of poverty, then we're just going to have these austerity measures that make this cycle of economic decline worse and worse. We have to do something differently. And if you can look at examples like Greece and see what happened when they kept cutting. This is not the time for that.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-780-9742. We have Kelly in Marshfield. Kelly, you're on with Kelly on Route 51.
Oh, great. Thanks. Good morning, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
I have my question and concern with the raising the minimum wage to $10 an hour. I understand the thought process in bringing the economic standards up for some of these people that are making less so that they can survive. However, my fear is, and I'm a small business owner, is that by doing that, we will start to eliminate, you know, a lot of small businesses will not be able to function on that paying that wage. You will see jobs lost because they will cut back on jobs. They'll have, say, 8 workers instead of 10. You know, to be able to afford the $10 an hour wage over $7 an hour. And I'm for it. I mean, I would like to see, I understand it, and I do think people need to make more, but what is your thoughts on the repercussions of small businesses having this mandate?
Kelly Westland?
Sure, that's a very understandable concern. I guess first I'll say that any proposal in increasing the minimum wage is going to be staggered over a period of time, so there will be an opportunity for adjustment. The second thing I'll say is that study after study show that the increase in the minimum wage does not equal less employment. In fact, a letter signed by over 600 economists was just delivered to the president and to Congress saying that all of their research shows that the net impact is not, it doesn't affect employment at all. In terms of how a small business would be affected specifically, you know, I think about my community, and I think about folks like what Henry Ford said. You have to pay your employees enough to be able to afford your product. You know, when I was waitressing, if the tips were good, then I might stay after and have a drink and a meal and spend some money at the restaurant where I worked. And I know that it's going to take a period of adjustment, but what we've typically seen is that small businesses are able to make up that difference in their profit margin by either making a slight increase or making other or in their prices or making other adjustments elsewhere. But what you end up with is employees who are more productive, you end up with lower employee turnover, and you don't have to spend as much training new people in.
But don't you feel that it's more of a catch-22? Because I feel like the reason people can't live on the wages that we're at now is because the price increase, the cost of living has gone up, and it's kind of like a vicious cycle. So we raised the minimum wage to $10 an hour, which means, like you said, they have to recoup somewhere. And if they're not cutting jobs, then they're raising the price of product, which then is still putting it still equally out of the reach of people, you know what I mean? So it's like it's a never-ending, the prices just keep going up, people need then more money, and I mean, how does that end up?
How do you stop the vicious cycle?
How do you stop the cycle? You know, and I've seen it because I, you know, like I said, I have a small business, we do some manufacturing, we have to raise the prices, and then you have, you know, we're running into the same thing. People are just always a little bit out of reach. You know, you look at the price of a gallon of milk, a gallon of gas.
And it's all gone up and it's going up. Kelly,
exactly.
Thanks so much for the phone call. Let's let
thank
Kelly
you.
Westland respond.
Sure. I guess that, yes, thank you, Kelly. I guess that what I would say is that, you know, over the last several decades, productivity and corporate profits have gone up and up and up while workers' wages have remained stagnant. And really, if you look at the rate of the worker wage increases versus – or worker wages versus the rate of inflation, even going up to 10-10 is not really a raise. If anything, it's keeping pace barely with where we should be. And, you know, for the most part, the folks that are going to be affected by this increase are the huge corporations, the Walmarts and the McDonald's of the world, where the CEOs are making 400 or more times what the average worker is making. And if those folks have to cut into their profits, into their profit margin, you know, if it's something that takes their employees off of social welfare programs because they can afford to do that, then I think that that's a net benefit for us, because right now we're subsidizing those huge companies' cost of doing business.
Sean Duffy sent us his position on the minimum wage. He says he would thoroughly consider a minimum wage increase bill should one be introduced. So if he's willing to consider one, why are you making such an issue out of it?
That's the exact same answer that I told you we got last week. I will thoroughly consider any bill before Congress. You know, that doesn't tell me whether he's willing to go to bat for workers in this district. That doesn't tell me whether he's willing to stand up for working people.
Let's go to Jim in Iron River. Jim, you're on with Kelly Westland.
Hi, Kelly. I'm also a small business owner, and I kind of would like to echo some of the concerns of the last caller. But I guess my fear is I'm familiar with the Ashland region, and we've seen a shift in our a loss of manufacturing and more of a shift towards the service industry. And I know you bill yourself as a small business owner. I just would like to know a little bit about your business, what kind of wages and benefits that you might give to your employees, how many employees you have, and then how we get ourselves back on track to create more manufacturing jobs that actually have good benefits and pay versus the service sector type jobs in the region.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Kelly Westland.
Sure. There are a few questions there. I guess that what I would say from my experience, from my perspective, the business that I have is a consulting business. So typically it's contract employees and the wages vary. But I've been working mostly for the last 3 years with a farmers cooperative.
Do you have any permanent full-time employees? I think that's one of his
questions.
It's
just me. Yeah. No, I'm a sole proprietorship.
And then you contract with people and hire them on a job-by-job basis.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, do you pay them?
At least $15 per hour.
At least $15 an hour. Okay.
Yeah. And what I've been doing for the last 3 years is working with a farmers cooperative. So we have all of these local food producers, and actually it's not just farmers. It's also, you know, the fisheries. There's a winery involved, some cheesemakers, fruit growers, vegetable growers, and people who raise all variety of animals. And we've built this cooperative from what had been less than a dozen individual businesses, and now it's well over two dozen, but the revenues have gone up more than, you know, 10 times what they were when we started. And what we're doing is we're building this strong local food system that means that we can grow the economy in the sectors of things like agriculture. And that means that we now have an export product, because right now we're sending money out of the region to buy food. And we have all of this agricultural opportunity to create that food right there, to put people to work growing it, and then to export that and bring money into the region. And it's something that's seen exponential growth over the last 3 years. It's been really incredible. And I know that, you know, the idea of bringing back manufacturing jobs is something that we want to talk about, but I don't see a lot of them going, you know, I don't see a lot of potential for those jobs to come back from China. We're going to have to start with the next generation, which means that we should start looking at...
There is a trade bill right now.
Oh, yeah.
regarding the Pacific Rim countries. Mm-hmm. Are you in favor of that or not? Are you in favor of free trade, which many people have blamed for our manufacturing jobs leaving the country, or are you in favor of tariffs if need be?
I am opposed to any bill that's going to do harm to the American worker, and what we've seen from NAFTA is that these agreements do great harm. I'm especially opposed to fast-tracking this bill, because I think that anything that, you know, has this much of an impact on American people should be out in the open. It should be transparent. We should be able to see what's happening in those discussions.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more and more of your questions with Kelly Westland, Democrat running for Congress against Republican incumbent Sean Duffy in Northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting two magical exhibitions, From Houdini to Hugo, The Art of Brian Selznick, and historic lithographs and props from the American Museum of Magic, on view through April 6th. More at lywam.org.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Kelly Westland, Democrat running for Congress in Northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. She is running against incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. She has no primary challenges who have come out at the present time, and we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it on the air. Let's go to Brad in Whiting. Brad, you're on Route 51.
Hello. 3 years ago, Sean Duffy was in the district at a town hall, and I didn't ask him a question, but I commented to him that Australia had implemented a very large stimulus plan, and it had kept their unemployment rate at 4% during this global recession. But before 30 seconds into my comment, Congressman Duffy started laughing right in my face along with his aide, and then turned his back to me and walked away. And it was his whole demeanor was very smug and very disrespectful. And don't you think that a congressman or any politician needs to realize that they represent all of their constituents and not just their base?
Well, Brad, I can't certainly verify that interaction you had with Mr. Duffy, but let's talk about civility and the importance of civility in Washington. We are in a very partisan environment, and Kelly Westland, you have taken some very strong partisan stances. How do you maintain a civil discourse with people who fundamentally disagree with the things that you support?
Sure. You know, I'm not one for personal attacks, but I will criticize policies. I will call out statements that are factual and say what I think is wrong with them. But I agree, we need more civility. I think that hyper-partisanship in our political system is immensely problematic. You know, most people, okay, first, every person in this country, in a community, has value, has a voice, has something to contribute. And, you know, I know where I stand on issues, but I know that other people feel just as strongly in their beliefs as I do. And their voice is just as valuable as mine. And I think that a diversity of perspective is what makes us stronger. But we have to treat each other like people. We have to talk to each other like people, even when we disagree.
Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742. Scott, you're on the road, and I see on my computer screen that you've got a question about the minimum wage. And let's make this the last question about the minimum wage, because we've got other issues that we have to deal with. Go on, Scott.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Kelly. I am a small business owner as well, and I think it's important to realize that there's a big difference in small businesses. I'm in retail. None of my employees at this point are making minimum wage. I can't hire someone at minimum wage to get them in. If the minimum wage goes up, the person who's making $9 an hour now needs to make that additional wage as well. I mean, so everyone in my company now has to have that equivalent raise.
Scott, you're telling me that you don't currently pay your workers minimum wage? Did I understand that right?
Yes, I have to pay them above minimum wage to hire a quality employee.
All right. Kelly Westland, anything to add on this issue? We've been across it already, but again, another concern from a small business owner saying you're going to hurt small businesses.
Sure. No. Well, I just wanted to say I think kudos to Scott for paying his employees above the minimum wage. But that's right. If you are somebody who makes the minimum wage and you're offered a job at another place where you get a quarter more per hour, then chances are pretty good you're going to go. But if we pay our employees something closer to a fair wage for their time, and I'm not even sure that 10, I think at least 10-10 is where we need to go. But that's how you get a quality person who's willing to stay there and become invested in the community. And you save that money by not having to train new employees every so often. But again, the studies all show, history shows, that this does not have a net decrease in employment.
Scott, thanks so much for the phone call. Of course, the long-term solution is good-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans say you're opposed to good-paying jobs in northern Wisconsin because you've expressed opposition to the iron mine that's been planned in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior. Now, you're on the Ashland City Council. Did you cast any votes on the iron mine? And if you did, what were they?
I did, and it's a vote that I'm quite proud of. I introduced a resolution the day before the state of Wisconsin adopted the new mining law that opposed a number of provisions because we were there to protect the people of Ashland and to protect the local governments and our local control. And that resolution, and they don't mention this on their comments about me, but that resolution opposing that new law was unanimously approved by the Ashland City Council. That doesn't happen very often.
Disconnect the telephone that was ringing in our studio. The Republican Party also says in a statement that you would be a blank check for Barack Obama and you are, quote, Pelosi approved, and you would push policies that we can't afford, including higher taxes, more government spending, and an unsustainable health care disaster.
That's just all of that is that's to be expected. Those are the blanket statements that they have to say about me for having a big D behind my name. They don't have anything else to be able to attribute that to. All of the votes that I've taken on the Ashland City Council that they're referring to have been with the majority of the council.
Well, they accuse you of raising taxes on the Ashland City Council. Is that true?
Yeah, but we have been raising them. I think that our city council president just gave a report on this week, and it's been at less than 30% of inflation over the last 4 years. So really, our city government has not been keeping up with the increases that the folks in the community have been getting and their cost of living increases and things like that. But, I'm about efficiency. I think that budgets should reflect priorities, and I think that we need to do them in a responsible way that's manageable for people, but so that we can still meet those things that they expect us to have as far as services in our community. My time on local government, my time in the nonprofit world, and the time as a small business owner, I can pinch a penny. I will find a way to get things done on a budget, and I think that that's a lesson that needs to be learned in Washington, but we have so many people who are more interested in giving away special favors to their campaign funders that that's not happening.
The Republicans are going to run hard against the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which Mr. Duffy has voted against repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
It's still unpopular with a lot of people. Do you think that will change by November?
Well, we're getting a lot more people enrolling. I'm not saying that it's it's not the best piece of legislation that it could have been. I think that we had too many giveaways, but there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think
the Republicans are attacking some of your planned improvements,
sure,
saying that you're going to make it even more radical by adding a public option to the law.
Where I live, I have one option on the exchanges. I have one option. And for folks that believe in, the competitiveness of the free market, that doesn't give me a lot of flexibility or cost competitiveness. It's something that Medicare is a program that is wildly efficient and very popular, and why shouldn't I have the opportunity to be able to buy into that and have access to affordable health care?
What are the good points of the current law, and what changes would you make?
Good points of the current law. Well, they can't charge me more for health care for being a woman. They can't disqualify me because I have a pre-existing condition. Students can stay on their parents' health insurance until through the age of 26. All of these things help make it more affordable for people. And as far as the Congressional Budget Office's recent report, you know, this is a chance for people like myself as a small business owner. You know, if I was stuck in a job because I was reliant on that health care program that they had available for me, I wouldn't have been able to strike out and do these other projects. This is a chance for people who want to do other things without being tied to a job for the health care.
There's a lot being made out of the Congressional Budget Office report that says upwards of 2 million people will quit their jobs in the next 10 years, I think it is, because of the Affordable Care Act. Republicans are saying, look, the job force is being decreased. Democrats are giving the argument you just gave, hey, these are people who are quitting dead-end jobs voluntarily because for the first time they can go on the open market and get affordable health care, maybe pursue their dreams, maybe open their own businesses.
They have that flexibility that they didn't have before. And in our economy right now, there are three people for every job that's open. That means that when those people leave to go and start their new entrepreneurial activities that, or, you know, whatever else they have in mind, that means that those positions, those opportunities for advancement are then open for other people in the workforce.
Congressman Duffy has supported entitlement reform, which some people would euphemistically call that, changes in Medicare and Social Security. He says to make them solvent in the years ahead and make sure that they're here for future generations. Under one of the plans that he talked about when he was on this show, anybody over the age of 55 would see no changes, but there would be options for investment for people younger than that, again, in order to keep the program solvent. What's wrong with that?
Well, we saw what happened when we trusted Wall Street the last time. When you say that he options for investment, you're talking about putting it into the stock exchanges?
Yeah, people would have an option to take their money right, and invest it so that they could get a higher return.
But while we're constantly pulling out the pieces of regulatory reform that have been applied to Wall Street, then how do we know that that's a safe option for retirement for people? I think that really one good change that we could make if we're talking entitlement reform would be to remove the cap on Social Security so that everybody pays the same rate. Talk about solvency. There's a great option right there.
Removing the cap, which is, what, at $110,000?
$113,000, yeah.
That's basically a 6.2% cut out of your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think it's fair for somebody who's making millions of dollars to pay an additional 6.2% in taxes?
If they're taking – it's not additional. It's paying the same rate as everybody else.
But it's an additional tax burden on them.
For them. But you know what? The fact is that right now all of that money is being funneled upward. And if we're all depending on that system, then we need to know that it's going to be solvent. And I think it's only fair that we all make the fair contribution.
Do you think the wealthy are paying their fair share? Or do you think they need to be taxed more?
You know, ask Warren Buffett. When you see that he's paying a lower tax rate than his secretary, there's a problem. But the fact is, Washington is run by people who have money, who have power and influence. And we're never going to serve the needs of most people until we change that.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking to Kelly Westland, a Democrat who's on the Ashland City Council, who's running for Congress in the 7th Congressional District against incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. We'll be back to talk about environmental and social issues and maybe even a little foreign policy right after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, bringing their 36th annual statewide convention back to Stevens Point April 24th through 26th, with hands-on workshops, national experts, and ideas for protecting our legacy of lakes. More at wisconsinlakes.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, Democrat Kelly Westland, who is running for Congress in the 7th Congressional District against incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. Mr. Duffy supports the Keystone XL pipeline. Where do you stand on that?
I think that there are much better opportunities for us to make investments like that in the next generation of infrastructure and energy technology in this country. It was just rated true by PolitiFact, actually, that Keystone XL pipeline would only create 35 permanent jobs.
But the oil is going to go to market anyway, right?
The oil, well, we don't have to make it easier. We don't have to. It's an export pipeline. That's not going to contribute to our energy independence. What would contribute to our energy independence is investing in those future technologies.
Isn't it a safety concern? If you put the oil on railroad cars, we can have more derailments and explosions like the ones we've seen over the past few weeks?
We've also seen explosions and things and problems with pipelines. But these pipelines, if we're talking about running over the aquifers and things that, you know, water, the one thing that's far more valuable than oil is our water.
How seriously do you take the problem of climate change? Mr. Duffy on this program said he's skeptical that climate change is caused by man, by our burning of fossil fuel, and the introduction of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. He also worries about the fact that, you know, if you enact a lot of mandates, it's going to hurt our economy.
You know, the economy is derived from the environment. Every resource we have that we assign value to is taken from our environment. And the fact is, climate change is real. We know that fossil fuels are bad for us and that they're finite. And we're going to have to be proactive about making a transition away from those things if we have any hope.
Some have accused the Republican Party, because of their skepticism or the skepticism of some members about climate science and because of their evangelical Christian wing. A number of them don't believe in evolution, of having a war on science. Isn't that a little bit overblown?
Well, you know, I wonder sometimes. It's, again, there's a broad, a diversity of perspective in this country. And one of the great things is that we're all, you know, free to say and think what we like. However, you know, in my opinion, I'm somebody who believes in science, and I can see the evidence. And when we have thousands of scientists around the world telling us that this is a serious problem, I think that we should at least, you know, pay that some heed. But really, what's wrong with deriving energy from sun and wind and things that are renewable and clean?
Another social issue here, is there a Republican war on women, if some as some have alleged? And as a woman running for Congress, what's your reaction to that?
Sure. You know, I'm looking forward to having that discussion more, I think, as this moves forward. But it's, if you look at what's happened over the last couple of years, we've definitely seen an uptick in pieces of legislation at the state and federal level that have been attacking the reproductive freedoms of women. And that's a problem. These are issues that were decided long ago. And really, it comes down to personal, it's my own autonomy. It's my decision. It's my opportunity to make choices about my future. And it's not just that, but I think part of the issue is, you know, we don't have women sitting at the table. We're not 52% of Congress, but we're 52% of the population. I think that we need to change the people having the discussion.
Do you think the fact that you're running as a woman when there's a lot of publicity about mm-hmm. these additional changes being made, mostly at the state level, making mm-hmm. it harder and harder to get an abortion, mm-hmm. and in some cases going after the ability of health care providers through the Affordable Care Act to provide contraception coverage, do you think you'll see an outpouring of female voters to make changes in Congress? Could that be something that actually might turn the balance in November?
I think it's overdue. You know, I'm a graduate of a program called Emerge Wisconsin, which is a program that is designed to help Democratic women learn how to run really effective campaigns. And it's helped me build a strong network of other women who are engaged in these fights all over the country. And it's something that I've seen more and more of lately, and I think that it will play a role. Because, you know, there was a gentleman earlier that was speaking about, you know, going to a town hall and feeling as though he was being ridiculed for what he had to say. At my town hall in Superior, there was a woman who told me that she was at one of Congressman Duffy's town halls where she asked him about what he thought in terms of transvaginal ultrasounds for women who were seeking abortions. And he laughed at her and said, well, I've never had one, so I don't know what that's like. And she told me about how, you know, he was trying to ridicule her, and I think that's wrong. But I also think that making jokes about issues that are very, very serious and very personal for women, I mean, that is a medically unnecessary, invasive procedure. It is not a joking matter.
How strong are you in your support for abortion? Do you think it's all right for states to outlaw late-term or third-trimester abortions when the fetus perhaps might be able to survive outside the womb?
I think, well, first I'm going to say, you just said my support for abortion. It's not support for abortion. It's support...
Support for abortion rights.
Support for the choice. And the fact is that this is a very personal and very difficult decision for women to make. And, you know, I think that I support the rights that were granted under the Roe versus Wade decision. I think that they need to be protected. In fact, I think that they should be incorporated into law at the national level in a more coherent way. I think that as far as things like late-term abortion, you know, that's something that personally I don't think that I could support. I think it would depend on the situation. But I think that every situation is unique and we need to have a better understanding. But I think it's inappropriate for men in the legislature who will never be in that decision or in that situation to be passing laws that limit a woman's ability to make choices about her future.
How do you feel about employers like Hobby Lobby who say they have religious objections to providing contraception coverage for their female employees as mandated under the Affordable Care Act?
I don't think any employer should have the right to make decisions about my medical situation. I don't think that any employer should be able to tell me what options I have or don't have in terms of my medical care. That's a private discussion between me and my doctor.
Attorney General Eric Holder says the administration is going to recognize gay marriages, even in states like Wisconsin, where they're not legal. What's your reaction to that?
Fantastic. I think that equality is the most important thing that we can promote in this country. I think that, none of us have access to equality until we all have access to that.
Wisconsin voters passed a constitutional amendment outlawing gay marriage. Should the federal government be able to overturn that?
They did, but I think that times have changed. I think that if we're ever going to be an inclusive community, then we need to be welcoming people. And I don't think that our government, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I think that I'm in support of marriage equality.
Let's talk about voting rights real quick. We've seen Republican-dominated legislatures pass voter ID laws, cut back early voting hours, eliminate same-day registration, take steps that opponents say are designed to keep blacks, Hispanics, poor people, and college students from voting. But Republicans say, what's wrong with having someone show an ID at the polling place? Shouldn't we be sure that a person who is who they say they are and are legally allowed, legally registered to vote?
These laws are solutions in search of a problem. That kind of voter fraud that they're talking about, somebody using someone else's ID, is virtually non-existent. This is a ploy to control who votes. We need more democracy, not less. We should have when they're cutting down the number of days that people can go and register to vote, they're limiting people's access to opportunity to exercise their constitutional right. And that's a serious problem, and I think it is manipulative. Just like gerrymandering, they're choosing their voters.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes here to touch on foreign policy, but I'm going to do it. let's talk about Iraq and Afghanistan. Still very dangerous places. Are we ending our involvement too soon?
You know, growing up in a military family, I have a different perspective in terms of what it means to support our troops. And we talk about these wars and our responsibility to make sure that people are safe. And I agree that we have some responsibility just because of the role that we've already played there. But the best way to support our troops is to bring them home and to keep them safe and to not send them into harm's way without a darn good reason.
Should we close the prison in Guantanamo?
Yes. Yes.
What about drones, the use of drones in the war on terror?
I am concerned about the use of drones. It's something I'm learning a lot more about. I don't like what we've seen in terms of innocent people being affected as collateral damage. I think that it disconnects us from the impacts of our actions, and I think that's a dangerous place to go. But I also understand the safety concerns for our own troops, but I think that maybe we should be using more diplomatic efforts than...
Spying by the National Security Agency, was Eric Snowden a traitor, a patriot, or maybe a little of both?
You know, again, I'm learning more, but to my mind, I think that the American people deserve to know when their government is spying on them. I cannot hold him at fault for that.
And finally, Tony from Tomahawk is asking that you challenge Sean Duffy to a debate in every county, and also that you avoid TV ads. You keep campaigns at the local level.
I love it.
What do you think of that?
I love it. I'm not sure that I can get away from the TV ads because that's just part of the game, but I guarantee you I would love to have a debate with Congressman Duffy in every county in the district.
And what if you are elected, and that's a big if, what can you do to address the partisan rancor in Washington?
You know, again, it goes back to that lead by example. My degree, again, is in conflict resolution, and it's about building coalitions and finding the common ground and working out from there. I'm not always going to agree with the folks that I'm serving with in Congress, but I'm going to try to find the opportunities to work together.
Kelly Westland, thanks for being with us. You've answered all my questions.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We want to thank today's guest, Kelly Westland, Democratic Party candidate for Congress in Northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will make this opportunity available once again to incumbent Republican Sean Duffy, as we have several times in the past. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and if you missed some of this broadcast, a reminder that Route 51 is repeated in its entirety every Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM Wausau and can be downloaded at wpr.org/Route 51. We can be heard every Thursday at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 a.m. Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, WHAA 89.1 FM Adams Wisconsin Rapids, WHSF 89.9 FM Rhinelander Eagle River, and WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.